Every time you send a text, swipe your credit card, use a GPS system, or go into a public building, you leave a digital record of your activities. And if you're 19 years old, your digital records are likely extensive. Those records have hung over Jahar Tsarnaev, the admitted Boston Marathon bomber. And today, in day 13 of the federal death penalty trial against him, the prosecution set off a veritable data dump on Jahar and his now deceased older brother Tamerlan. This is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse, I'm David Boeri with WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Kevin, we talked before in the podcast about this being the most modern trial we have ever witnessed in this district. Mm. And today was a prime example of that, the trail of the pressure cookers. Now, we should explain the pressure cookers are what were used to create the bombings of the Boston Marathon. This is terrific policing work. The investigators identified the pressure cookers and then that they're only sold by Macy's. They found out that between 2012 and 2013, the company sold 4,000 of the 6-quart cookers, but only 74 of the 4-quart cookers. How many were purchased in cash? That's a good question to ask. It narrows the field, figuring these guys aren't going to be wanting to use credit cards or whatever. The answer comes back from Macy's. There are 3 purchased in cash in the entire eastern region, 1 in Saugus and 2 in Boston. And they're going to get the date and time of the purchase.
We've been waiting for this part of the trial, David. When were they going to reconstruct the bombs? Where were the bombs made? They went on to show that what went into the bomb were these BBs and nails. There were 2 separate purchases of boxes, 6,000 count boxes of BBs. And for whatever reason, these guys have clearly shown some forethought of not attracting too much attention. So what did they do? They drove up to New Hampshire. They went to a Walmart in Amherst, New Hampshire, and then they drove 13 miles away, and they made 2 separate purchases of 2 separate boxes of these BBs. So they leave New Hampshire armed with 24,000.
So they recover the Garmin, which is the GPS device that belongs to Tamerlan Tsarnaev. And there are records on that device show that on 8/13, on January 31st of 2013, the car had stopped moving at the Square One Mall in Saugus, which is a suburb of Boston. At 8:42, travel resumes, according to the GPS recorder. And in between, sure enough, Macy's has the record of a cash purchase at 8:30. Bingo!
The pressure cooker.
And the GPS records also show that GPS traveling to 2 Walmarts in New Hampshire, you've talked about that, on March 6, 2013. And there are records and receipts that show the purchase of the BBs that are used in making the bombs, according to the recipe that's in Inspire magazine, which is on their files, how to make a bomb in the kitchen of your mom. And it indicates you should have glue, and you glue the metal and the BBs to the inside of the pressure cooker.
And then obviously the government then put out more evidence showing that once they got inside 410 Norfolk Street in Cambridge, which was the Tsarnaev family apartment, they were able to find 2 bottles of Gorilla Glue. They were able to find these things that would have been used in the actual manufacture of the bomb. But the government suggested, David, but I don't think ever quite said categorically that this was the kitchen of their mom where they built the bomb.
They can suggest it, but they have no evidence of it. You can infer something's going on. You mentioned the glue. There's gun cleaning equipment. There's the gasket to a pressure cooker there. The hobby fuse, which is a real telltale sign. All of that, but they searched that place. They did turn it upside down, and they were never able to find any kind of traces of gunpowder.
And the prosecution was desperately trying to suggest that Jahar was living there at the time of all of this. This is the same government that a year ago said that Jahar Tsarnaev and his defense team had no right to have that property that was seized there returned to them because he had stopped living there when he went to UMass Dartmouth.
Well, that was then, but this is now for the government. And we keep on talking about what the end game is. That is where Tamerlan and Catherine, Tamerlan's wife, were living, along with their child. And the government wants to say, well, Jihar was there for some stretch of time.
The one thing the government introduced again was the Shahada, the flag that contains the Islamic creed, but has sometimes been appropriated by Islamist groups. And we have seen previously a photograph of Jihar with the Shahada hanging on the wall. And the government introduced not only that flag itself, but also two smaller versions of it.
I found that extremely prejudicial. They're waving the flag. They haven't really established what it is, but the government could not seem to get enough of waving that flag in
right.
the courtroom in front of the jury.
Without explaining it.
Without explaining
what it is, and obviously putting in the context, you could go into the home of an ordinary Muslim family that would have no truck for terrorism, and the Shahada would be up on their wall.
But it's big. It's black. It's
and it looks like something that you see when
Arabic.
Somebody gets their head cut off.
Exactly. And so that full-fledged flag and pulling it out in front of the jurors had that effect. They couldn't do it enough, it seemed to
me. The last thing that the government got in today, and I thought it was one of those things that cuts both ways. Obviously, the government thought it was good for them, but I think it also played into the defense narrative of Jihar being sort of this kid caught between two cultures, particularly being dragged one way by his older brother. And we had these extraordinary exchange of text messages between Jihar and a good friend of his.
And just before we read the text, I should advise our listeners that they do include some mild profanity.
Let's do it.
So you can be...
I'll be the friend.
This is January 28, 2013.
Oh, yeah? You getting yourself wifey? Good shit.
Well, I'm about that, but we'll see.
I think it's a little too early. I don't even know if I want to get married, bro.
LOL, yeah, I know. I'm just trying to finish school. I mean, there's one other option, bro. Highest level of jhana. That means heaven.
The only good thing about having a wife is the, and here he uses a word for genitalia, is halal.
If you know what I mean.
Jihad? I am really down for that jihad life, though. I've been thinking about that lately.
Come on, son. Don't be hot over the phone, LOL.
And it's affecting my future plans. I don't even know if I want to go to college.
I'm with you on this one. I want to talk to you in person sometime soon.
All right. We got to chill sometime, man. I'm trying to study Islam or the Quran.
Yo, man, that sounds good. Do that. For now, read a lot of Islamic literature.
You're looking at a future imam. When are you coming back for break?
Inshallah. Back either this weekend or next weekend, I'll let you know. But for now, all I'm saying is go to college or just chill and educate yourself. I got a plan. I'll tell you later about it.
So that's the messaging. That's the text of these kids. They sound like an American suburban kid somewhere. And yet there's this other world that they're both talking about in kind of a lighthearted way. But then there's another exchange, David, that even captures this even more. And it's kids in Cambridge talking about going to Ivy League schools, aspiring to something bigger, and then kind of realizing, maybe jokingly around, that's not really where they're going.
So here, this is a conversation, text conversation, on Christmas 2012, just a few weeks before the one we read. And you'll be that other friend who's texting.
I'm Jahaz, buddy. I started off. What's your plan? Stay at Dartmouth or transfer out? Yale? MIT? Harvard? Have you thought about what school?
One more semester, I'm probably going to transfer. Not probably, most definitely.
Oxford? Or are those schools too easy for you?
Nah, not Ivy.
Ivy schools are a force. Oh, shit, he's going to Harvard. That's crazy. No point in going there other than to look good.
Something manageable, not for work and slaving myself and crying myself to sleep.
And here he uses the N-word. N-words need to understand. Don't Ivy League school to be successful.
I'm trying to go to an Ivy for masters. Not gonna lie.
What do you want to be? Sniper? Pyro? Engineer? Knowledge to become imam? Biologist? That shit crazy. WTF. Imam Sanayev then? Spy?
I want to bring justice for my people. How does this cut? This is introduced as evidenced by the government. Some ways I see this as exculpatory in a way, or at least it brings sympathy to the defendant, and I see this helping the defense. Much of that stuff was teenage stuff.
The other text that I think the defense absolutely loved today was Jihar talking about Tamlin being a good influence on him, calling Tamlin a role model. That's exactly what the defense wants the jury to hear, that Tamlin was a role model, that he was devout and in some ways an extremist, and that's what was pulling at Jahar.
Such a role model.
Well, you have to listen to those text messages if you're on the jury, David, and say, does that sound like a committed jihadi, or does that sound like some 19-year-old kid from Cambridge who's pretty confused about his life? And we can't stress enough that this isn't about his guilt. He did it. The question is only about why did he do it, what was his level of culpability, and can the defense somehow get somebody on the jury to say, we're not going to kill him?
More than culpability, what was his moral responsibility? Did he have the same moral responsibility his brother had? Day 13 of the federal death penalty trial of Jahar Tsarnaev. This is Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Join us again tomorrow when we expect the government will rest its case.
Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at BostonGlobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.